You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this.
Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Amy Taylor. I'm also Amy. It's Amy and Amy. That sometimes is confusing, but it won't be. Anyway, you can handle it, I'm sure. We talk about how a cancer diagnosis changed her path in life. Now, cancer is a big word, and the type of cancer that Amy had is thyroid cancer. I'm not a doctor, but I looked up some statistics about this for you. Truthfully, I should have done this before I did the interview, but here we are. So it's not considered a super common cancer, but 1 in 55 women will statistically get the disease. It's more common in women over the age of 50. So there you have that. I got these data from PubMed. That's my source. If it's wrong, let me know. It's considered to have a high survival rate, and this comes up in the interview. Something that I think is interesting about this and that came up for me during this conversation is just about the human experience and how it just sometimes feels like we need something dramatic to happen in our lives to push us to make changes. That's weird, right? Like, why is that? Why do we need that? I can't say that I actually understand why this is, but I know I've seen it in my own life and in the people around me that I know and that I care about. All right. So with all that jibber jabber out of the way, are you ready to hear how Amy Taylor changed her life after her own diagnosis? Of course you are. So let's get to it. Amy Taylor, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm super happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am.
All right, let's do it. I start all my conversations asking my guests what part of the world they call home. So share with us where you are today.
I am in Missouri, right next to Kansas state line in the United States.
Very nice. All right, very good. What part of, so you're right near, so does that mean you, oh, so you're in Kansas City. You're in Kansas or Kansas City?
I'm just south of Kansas City, Missouri.
Just south of Kansas
City. The Royals and Chiefs.
So my mom is from Kansas City. That's where her family was from. And I actually went to the University of Kansas. So I spent 4 years of my life in Lawrence and loved pretty much every minute of it. So there you go. So we have that in common. I have fond memories of Kansas City. All right. So the next thing I'm going to ask you, one more warm-up question before we get to the topic of the day, which is, what it was the most recent, like, last compliment, words of kindness that you gave someone else? It can be something small. It can be from earlier today.
Well, earlier today, I went to Scooters for some coffee, and the cashier that rang me up had these beautiful, long, golden braids that she had French braided in her hair, and I told her they were beautiful and that I was impressed that she did them herself.
Very nice. Who doesn't love a compliment on your hair? Honestly, right? All right. Topic of the day. We are going to talk about how a diagnosis of thyroid cancer changed the path of your life. And so my first question about this is, how long ago did you get this diagnosis?
It was about 2 years ago.
Oh, so pretty recent. Okay, pretty recent. Mm-hmm. So anytime I talk to people about a health diagnosis like this, I don't like to keep the audience in suspense for how you're doing now. I like to sort of bring it right out so that I'm not like, you know, people are not worried about my guest. But so share with us how you're feeling now, what your prognosis is, stuff like that, so that people know as we go through this conversation.
I feel great right now. I do have some side effects from the treatment, but they're not bad. And my prognosis is good. They actually say thyroid cancer is, if you're going to get cancer, thyroid cancer is what you want.
So, and I'm not a cancer expert or a doctor of any kind, but I do know people who've gone through this treatment. And so I had the impression that it was something that it is treatable for many people. So I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that you're healthy too, because, you know, things happen. There we go.
Yes,
all right.
Thank you.
You are very welcome, of course. Because, yeah, otherwise people would be wondering how you were doing all the way through the conversation. That's no fun. That's not the point. All right. So very good. Let's back up and talk about what life was like before the diagnosis, just so that we have a comparison, because we're talking about change, right? So Tell us about, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. What was life like? What was the career you had, your family? You know, were you happy? All those kind of things.
I was really, I don't know that I was happy. I was bored and I was doing the same thing every day. I'd worked at the same company for almost 12 years and done the same job there that whole time. And I went to work, came home, took care of my daughter, and went back to work the next day. So, I mean, it was really not exciting.
Not exciting. Were you aware that you were bored, do you think? I mean, this is a weird question because, like, you can't actually go back in time. But, we get into routines. And so then the question is, if you've been doing this job for 12 years, which, is great, like stability, security, those kind of things. Who's going to complain about having a stable job for 12 years, right? So, but if we had run into each other then, do you think you were aware that you were bored, or you just were like, this is life?
I don't think I would have called it bored at the time. I think I would just say I was on autopilot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, yeah. So very good. 'Cause there's like a path, right? There's a path that we follow. And I talk about this with a lot of people. It's like you go to school, you pick a job that you're going to go for, you get the job. And then, there's this idea that when we do that, and we have a family, right? You get married, you pick a partner, you have some kids, and in there is supposed to be happily ever after. But then sometimes it takes some work to actually get there. So, tell us, we're going to talk about how your life changed after the diagnosis, but share with us a little bit about how you discovered it. Like, what was going on in your life? Did you just go for a checkup and you found out? Like, what was going on?
I had some basic blood work done, and it was just supposed to be everyday kind of run-of-the-mill test. And they ran some tests on my thyroid just to check on it, and came up that there was an issue. And so my doctor said, you know what, just in case, it's probably nothing, but let's go ahead and send you for an ultrasound of your thyroid.
Okay.
So we did, and it came back that there was cancer.
All right. And so this is when, when I go to the doctor, they have me swallow and they feel my throat and then they check, the various levels as part of like a blood test. Is that the test that you had were having done too? Just that regular health screening?
Right.
Yeah. And then then they sent you for further testing, of the sonogram. When you were going, stuff like this can be really scary. When you think back to that moment when they said, "Hey, it's probably nothing, but let's go ahead and check." How did you feel?
I was scared and I was kind of mad that everybody said it's the best cancer you can get. Don't worry about it. You're in good hands. And I thought, you know, I deserve to be upset that I have cancer.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. And so I was a little ticked off.
And yeah, no, I get that because that's a, sure, right? It's not, there are cancers that are super aggressive and things like that. But at the same time, the best solution here is to like not get it. So you get to have the emotions, like you've got to go through it. And even though the treatment might be okay, I don't know that it's particularly enjoyable to go through any treatment. I mean, I'm a person who complains about getting a tetanus shot because it hurts.
Right.
So, what kind of support did you have with you as you were going through this?
My mom and my dad live like 2 miles from me, and they are the most incredible people and very supportive. And so they were there with me the whole time. And they even, when I had to be in isolation for part of my treatment, they took my teenage daughter and took care of her during that time, which was like 2 weeks.
Okay, wow. All right, so let's talk about this because I did not look it up to double check it before I talked to you because I'm a bad researcher. But I've known, like I said, I've known people who've gone through this. Take us through a little bit, just the high level. You don't have to be too many details, but tell people a little bit about the way they do this treatment because there's a part of this where you go through radiation and you can't be around anybody, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Radioactive iodine therapy is what it is. You have to swallow something that is radioactive that they hold gloves to touch, and yet you have to put it in your mouth and swallow it.
All right, so you get the sonogram, they come back and it's cancer. You then go to a new doctor, an oncologist that tells you what the treatment plan is going to be.
Well, actually, I went to a endocrinologist, a
Okay.
surgeon, and he actually removed my thyroid.
So, all right, so they remove your thyroid and then they do the radioactive treatment.
Well, they removed the thyroid and then they did some testing, a whole body scan to
Okay.
see if it was anywhere else in my body. And they found there was a little bit left in my thyroid bed. That's when they
Okay.
did the radioactive iodine.
So then you take it, and it's got to be super unnerving. It's like, here's this thing that's dangerous for me, the medical person. I'm going to protect myself. You please put it in your butt. I feel that way about X-rays too. The same kind of thing. It's like they tell you, they're like, wear this lead thing. I'm going to go outside, but you just stay there. And it's like, this seems like it's a bad plan, honestly.
Right.
And this is, and so what you're going through with thyroid is like that times a million. They bring you, is it like it's a pill or a drink that you took or a
It's a
shot
big
or
pill.
a big pill, and they won't touch it and they don't want it, but then you take it. And then what does it mean that you're in isolation? What does that actually mean for people?
It means I had to put, like, I put trash bags in my car to sit on so that I didn't get anything on the car. And I got home and I didn't sit on any furniture that my daughter usually sits on, like the couch. I sat in my love seat, but I put blankets on my love seat so that I could wash them later and get rid of anything that got on them. And I had to eat with plastic silverware and paper plates and things because you don't want to infect your normal cookware and stuff, and you have to eat a very special diet. I basically lived off for a month before and 2 weeks after a diet of nuts and cranberries and crackers, special
Really?
crackers.
So they give you this, and then you can't even you can't even touch anything because
Right.
it'll contaminate, and p other people can what it pick up the radiation.
Right, it could affect
Wow.
their thyroid and cause problems with their thyroid.
Oh my goodness. All right. So you have this treatment, so that you have this surgery, which has some impacts. The thyroid regulates things in our body. And then you also have this follow-up radiation treatment. Were there any other things that went through that were a part of your follow-up treatment?
Just the whole body scan and then.
Body scan.
Unfortunately, when I had the thyroid removed, it normally is just a one day stay in the hospital, but due to a previous surgery on my stomach, I had problems taking in the calcium, and
Okay.
calcium can affect your heart. So they wouldn't let me leave until they got my calcium regulated. So I was there for like 11 days, and my parents, God bless them, took care of my daughter during that as well.
My goodness. Okay, so this is a very, you went through a lot for this
Yeah.
treatment, even though and so probably I can imagine that after the diagnosis, when people said, "Hey, it's the best of the options," and you were like, "Hey, yeah, please say something else, say anything else," then your treatment plan was actually pretty rough. You had a surgery that could have been simple, but you had complications. 11 days finding care for your family and being separated, that's a big deal. That's a big
Yeah.
strain on your life, separation from your daughter. And then the radiation treatment, while it sounds like it was successful and we're happy to have this kind of medical intervention, that sounds like it's very, a lot of work. You modified your diet beforehand very dramatically. And for 2 weeks, you modified how you were living in your life. You kept separate from the people who you love. I mean, putting trash bags down on your seat so you don't touch any fabric, using different utensils and not coming into physical contact with anything you're going to use again. That's a big process.
Yeah, it was a little overwhelming at times. And like my daughter, God bless her, forgot her laptop at home or her iPad at home, which was her school iPad. And so I didn't know that. She had left it in her bedroom and I couldn't get it for her and give it to her. So she had to go to school and ask them to loan her another one and start her homework over because I couldn't get it and bring it to her or give it through the door or anything because I would contaminate it.
Oh my goodness. That's a very, very, that's a lot of dedication. to your care. And so I can see how this would be. All right. So I want to take a second to talk directly to the audience. I am talking to Amy Taylor today about her diagnosis of thyroid cancer that happened a couple of years ago and then how it changed her life. And so I post a question to social media on Instagram and on YouTube, and I invite you into the conversation. So go check it out. I'll be there in the comments. Maybe Amy will come to the comments too. You can chat it out with other people that are part of the community. It's fun. You're invited. If you're not already following the show on social media, the links will be in the show notes. Of course. Okay, back to the topic. All right. So after you get the diagnosis, or tell me if I'm wrong about that, you can let me know when this happens, but you decide that you need to truly live the life you want from here on out. And so in a second, I'm going to ask you about the actual changes you made. But first, I want to take you back to the time when you realized that this was a decision you could make, when you were really thinking about your life intentionally. And does that include like trying to remember where it was and what it felt like when you realized you're like, I'm not living the life that I want to.
Yeah, I thought that during the weeks of isolation, I had a lot of time to think. And I thought a lot about how cancer is pretty scary. And I was not happy with the way my life was going. And there were things that I had wanted to do for years and had not done. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to put it off anymore. I'm going to make these changes.
That is very interesting. Sometimes there's a quote that floats around on social media that I'll see, and it'll say, and it was probably something that floated around before there was social media, now that I think about it, but it says something like, you know, the mistake is thinking that we're always going to have more time, like that there's more time to do the things we want. And then again, I want to be like gentle with myself and with everybody else because, like, you know, we're human and there's something about us that we need these sort of big life moments to jog us into action sometimes. I don't know what it is about human beings that we're like that, but I'm the same way too sometimes. Sometimes I'm just motoring along and it's like, oh, I need something big. And then I'll think to myself, why do I need such a big event to kick me into action? But I don't know that that's super helpful. So you were in isolation alone when you were going through this thought process. And how did, so isolation is tough. Isolation is
Yeah,
tough.
I agree.
Yeah. Isolation is tough. And you probably did you, I mean, at the time, it was probably a little scary too, because you're going through this treatment for cancer is a scary word. Even if somebody tells you you've got the
Right.
good cancer is a scary word. So, how were you feeling at that time about just things overall about, you know, would you have said that you, if you had to pick three words to describe your mindset at that point, what would it have been?
It was hopeful. I think that I was a little anxious about contaminating something. And so, like, when I had to clean before my daughter came home after the 2 weeks, I mean, you have to clean the toilet, you have to clean everything. And I was nervous because I thought, oh my God, how would I feel? It's one thing to have it myself, but how would I feel if I caused my daughter to have thyroid problems? So I was very anxious.
Yeah, so something has popped into my mind, and I, how old was your daughter, if I can ask at the time?
She was 13.
13. There's a part of this, right, which is like you're concerned about seeing people who are of reproductive age, right? Like this radioactive. Yes. So I do have a memory of that. Whenever you've got somebody who's like doing the radioactive treatment for prostate cancer or thyroid, or what you were going through the thyroid, there is a separation. It's like we're concerned about your exposure to everybody, but specifically, you know, girls who are of reproductive age. They're like, don't go anywhere near anybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure. It's interesting, not surprising, but interesting that even in this hard time, you're saying I'm not living the life I wanted, but you're also, your concern is really for the people you are taking care of.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that is okay. So one of the things that you do as a change that you make is you go decide to go back to school.
Yes.
So, tell us about that. Like what kind of school did you go back to do?
Well, I went back to get my master's, and it's kind of funny because I was 52 at the time, and I had started my master's 20 years before.
Okay.
And I had been laid off at that age. And so I lost who was paying for my college. And then, life happens and 20 years go by and you're like, why didn't I ever finish that? And I wasn't happy in my job anymore. And I thought the only way to really move forward is to go back and finish that. So I went back and got my MBA.
So I have some practical questions about this because I'm fascinated by the fact that there was a 20-year gap. Were you able to go back to the same school where you had started 20 years ago?
Yes.
Okay. And then was it the kind of thing where they were like, okay, great. All of your credits from 20 years ago are the same. Here, was it like, was it an easy process or were they like I said, or was it like, well, okay, but the program has changed. Like now you have to do it. Like what happened?
They definitely said, okay, the program has changed and the classes you took aren't all relevant anymore,
Okay.
but they took what they could and transferred it, and then they went ahead and did some waivers on a few others and said it's close enough that we'll let these slide.
Okay.
So I got most of it passed through.
That's good. I'm glad about that. And then what was it like for you as in your 50s? So you had been in school in your 30s, which is still considered non-traditional, but school changed a lot in those 20 years. So what was your experience as like a student? What was different when you went back 20 years later?
Well, first of all, I was doing it online.
Okay.
And so it was a totally different classroom relating to your peers. There weren't any so-called lectures there, which I gotta say, still to this day, I learn a lot better from hearing someone speak and being able to ask questions. And this was, you could ask questions, but it was after you'd read so many chapters or done certain things. So it was just a different environment and a different way of learning.
All right, so then instead of going to a classroom, sitting in a classroom among your peers listening to a lecture, it was all text-based. It was all reading things and interacting by chat, no video lectures.
Right.
Interesting. Oh my goodness. Were you still interested in the classwork? Was it interesting to you what you were studying?
Yeah, it was. It was very interesting. I've always struggled with math. So finance and accounting, man, I just thank God that I passed them.
That's what I talk to a lot of business people who are like, just let me get through this. And then on the like when you're
Right.
talking about psychology, the statistics, let me make it through statistics and then I'm golden. So all right, how long does it take you to finish this? So it's online, you're still working, you're doing this nights and weekends and in free time. How long does it take you to finish this at master's degree?
About a year and a half.
Okay, and how long had you worked on it 20 years ago?
About a year.
Okay, so yeah, that's fast. Good job.
Yes.
Very, very good. All right. So, and the reason you hadn't finished it before was because you had been in a job that was paying for your master's program. And then when you left that job, you were like, ah, too bad, so sad, not going to do this.
Right.
All right. And the second time, were you paying out of pocket or did you also have an employer?
No, I have an employer or had an employer at the time that paid for it. I've switched employers now after I graduated.
That's a terrific perk of employment, I have to say. I really am jealous about that. All right, very good. So you mentioned this is a good segue. I wrote these questions in a good order. You mentioned that you changed your job after this. So you stay, you've got the diagnosis, you go through the treatment, you have this revelatory experience while you're in isolation that you're not loving some things about your life. You're not loving your job. You didn't finish this degree. You have the ability that your current employer at that time will pay for you to finish your degree. So you do that. Gold star, check that off the box. Then, thanks for the help, employer. Goodbye. You leave the job.
Yes.
What was the reason you decided to leave the job that you didn't like? Like, what was going on?
Well, my first degree, my bachelor's, is in social work, and I've been doing social work for almost 30 years, and I still have a heart for social work. It's part of what I do today. But I had become very tired of driving all around Missouri and Kansas to see members in their homes, and I've never liked traveling anyway, so that was just not fun for me. And then I just got tired of all the paperwork and the not being able to help my members the way I wanted to because I had too many members. When you have over 100 members and you have to go see them in their homes, it's kind of tough. So I just felt like I couldn't be as effective as I wanted to be. So once I had my master's behind me, I was able to get a job at another organization that does exactly what my company does had done. I tried to get a job with my initial company first, but couldn't find anything that fit me. And then the perfect job just opened up at another company doing the same thing, except for the job was a member advocate. And it's called an ombudsman liaison.
Okay.
And so it's a little bit of reporting and then a lot of just helping members that call in and are unhappy with their services. And I actually get to help them get what they need. And I spend more
Okay.
time with them individually, but it's all over the phone.
Very nice. All right. So you used going back to school as a way to level up professionally and to
Yes.
modify some things about this job, even though you care deeply about the type of job it is and the work you're doing. Going back to school enabled you to get into a position where you didn't have to drive around and do casework person to person, and you were able to impact greater change with your skills. Does that sound like?
Yes.
All right, that's. Do you think? All right, so let's talk about the connection between the diagnosis, and the job change. Do you think that there's a chance that you might have done this, gone back to school and tried to level up the job, even, at some point in the future without the diagnosis of cancer?
I doubt it. I hadn't even had the inkling of the idea to do that in 20 years. And it seemed like way too much work and like it would take too long if I did think about it. And so now I just thought, I don't care how long it takes, I'm just going to do it.
I think that's fascinating because the employment that you had covered it and so on. So I just think that's really interesting. I think that's helpful for people. It's like, yeah, I was in the spot. The resources were there. That didn't appear after you had the diagnosis, but it's the confrontation with the diagnosis, I guess that is the way to say it, and the time in isolation that pushed you to make these decisions. And so that is very cool. Okay, another change you made is that you started your own podcast and side hustle as a result of this. Probably not while you were in graduate school, but let me know because I feel like you were probably very busy then. So I'm going to ask you about those things directly. But before I do that, I wanted to ask you whether or not you are a person who had had other side hustles before. So you had this job for 12 years, you've got a degree, you've got a master's degree. Some people just always sort of have things going on the side. Are you a person that sort of always has things going on the side, or was this the first time that you had started a side hustle?
This was the first time ever. I'd grown up with my dad being an entrepreneur and having his own locksmith business my whole life. And so I knew what that world was like, but I had never done it myself.
All right. And so you had been somebody who is, I've got my job, I'm settled. If I don't have this job, I'm going to do another job. And then now you've got a side hustle. All right. Very good. So tell us about your podcast and your side hustle. What are you doing?
Well, I am what I call a mental health warrior and neurospicy mama. I've got a podcast by that name, and I talk about mental health and neurodivergence and try to end the stigma and make talking about these issues a common day occurrence.
That is very nice. So based on it, because I have this podcast and because I am in the entrepreneurial space, I talk to people about neurospiciness and neurodivergence, and I feel like there's a lot of conversation about it. I don't remember this from like the 1980s and 1990s. I will be like when I was a teenager and a young adult, I don't remember people really talking about it. But then when I had kids, I knew people who were dealing with specific autism, which now we put into the spectrum and neurodivergence. But like, do you find that people are talking about it more now? Or are you happy to have people talking about it? Do you think is it possible people are always talking about it? I guess not.
I think people that were affected by it were talking about it. I mean, I know when I had my kids 18 years apart, so there's a big difference there. But my son, when he was little, had a friend who had autism. And so I talked with his mom about it. And then my daughter ended up having autism years later when I had her. And so that's one of the things that interests me.
Yeah.
And now I don't find that very many people talk about it in my community in the world that I'm in right now.
Okay.
Online, I talk about it. I'm in Facebook groups for it and things like that. So I think it's more common in the social media world,
Sure.
but not
Yeah.
so much in like the school system and the regular hanging out with your kids' friends kind of world.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, and that's very, very helpful. So I'm actually glad that I asked that. So that's one of the great things. Like, so social media and online stuff gets a lot of heat for causing a lot of problems. But one of the things that it does really, really well is it can connect you with specialized communities around the globe, if you need it. Now, the thing that I think makes that hard is that you have to know what you're looking for. So, like, you have to know, hey, I'm looking for a neurodivergent community, and then you can go and find it. But if you were to rewind the clock to 1970, 1985, that was a lot harder to do.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so that makes a lot of sense. So, like, within the online communities, it is there, but you do not feel it in your face-to-face community and within the school district. All right. So, tell us again the name of the podcast.
Mental health warrior and neurospicy mama.
All right. Very good. All right. So, you have an offer for, in a minute, we're going to do the final fun questions. But first, you have an offer for the listeners, which is Who Am I? Which is a guided journal to unlock the power of self-discovery with the Who Am I journal. It's about self-understanding, clarity and direction, emotional growth, empowerment, and mindfulness. This is a free resource that is available at advancingwithamy.com. And that link is in the show note. There's no coupon needed or anything. And so the easiest way to get these links, even though it's in the show notes, is to be a subscriber to the email list at imperfectadulting.com, because then I zip right into your email and you can just click on it. All right. Thank you for that resource. That's really good. Are you ready for the final questions?
I am.
Ta-da, ta-da, ta. All right. If I took a peek in your kitchen, would I find pre-made food, or is your kitchen what we call an ingredient kitchen, where it's full of ingredients that you use to cook and make food?
Both. I gotta say, I'm more likely to be making a pre-cooked meal, but I also, we love salmon and chicken and things like that, so I will get those fresh and make them myself.
Very nice. Many, many years ago, somebody was in my house and they opened the kitchen and they said, "Where is the food?" And I was like, "What are you talking about? The refrigerator is full." And they're like, "No, this is ingredients, Amy. This is not food." And I was like, "I think that's food." Like, that was the first time I had ever heard that. But so that's
How funny.
definitely, yeah. So, which do you do? What do you do to relax? So, which of these sounds more like what you might do to relax? Listen to music, read a book or listen to a book, watch TV or a movie, or maybe something like crafting.
I like to listen to podcasts and listen to books, audiobooks.
Very nice. Thank you. All right. So I think the world can be divided into two groups. This is not a political question, don't worry. So I would divide the world into two groups. Those who have a karaoke song ready to go at any time, and those of us who would never, ever willingly participate in karaoke. Which do you fall into?
Oh, I would definitely have my song ready. I will survive.
There you go. See, I love it. It's one of two things. People either have it, or those people like me that are like, no, let's go play darts. That's it, Amy Taylor. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected,
That may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.